Hello, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet, back with you again. Very excited to be here this week talking to you about Beacon 23 Season 2 premiered over on MGM Plus, the streaming service you didn't know existed, unless you have it, in which case I hope you're watching Beacon 23 and you will join myself and my partner in crime this week and through the rest of the season, talking about what's going on this strange little lighthouse in space. Of course, we covered Beacon 23 season one when it was airing back in the fall over at our old alma mater post show recaps. Most recently, we just talked about Halo season two together and had a very good time. I'm delighted to be joined by the one and only Corey B. Corey, how are you?
Hey, Rich, how's it going? I am super happy to be here. You know, the proverbial GWB of our installation, the post-show recaps, did have some cracks in it and started to shut down. But we closed the hatch, the rest of the beacon's fine, and we can continue moving forward from here. Very excited to get back into Beacon 23. If you haven't seen Beacon 23 and you have a way to get MGM Plus, I highly recommend it. This is a fun show. A show that had two seasons in a very, very short amount of time, Rich, which I think is very interesting.
It's really fascinating, right? They got together, they filmed the two seasons back to back. Glenn Mazzara is the showrunner. He was originally on just as a producer, but was upjumped to showrunner as season one was kind of like closing out. Most notably, his run on like The Walking Dead season two and season three after Darabont left really elevated that show to the kind of cultural juggernaut that it became, if it is not still that. Beacon 23, it's a hard show to like get people towards. I know it turned up on Amazon. I had a lot of people watching it. It's going to be available in different places in different regions. I'd even read a little bit about some hopes and dreams that they may be able to get it on Netflix eventually. Oh. But it's a gem of a show. So if you're finding this podcast like organically in the feed and you have not seen Beacon 23 season one, the gist is it's a very cool sci-fi show, high concept, kind of mid-budget, very dramatic. It's a lot of people in rooms talking about heavy ideas. And I think that it captures an element of science fiction that's a little overlooked in the modern age for like the glitz and glam of special effects and big explosions and kicky flippy lightsaber battles, Corey.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like a traditional sci-fi show by any means. And it dives deep into a lot of very big themes. And a lot of it is empathy and loneliness. And just like a little bit of, you know, companionship along the way. And it's such an interesting show and in how it, at least historically in season one, and we're already starting to see it a little bit in season two, in terms of even characters, right? It giveth and it taketh away. It's got usually there's no more than two or three human characters that are not AIs in a given room. And this episode was actually an exception, probably just because we were cooling down from the events of season one. to start with. And we sort of end at a point where we're again back with the loneliness that we typically have thematically in this show. It's a very interesting conceptual show. Like you said, it's not the highest budget, but it's also very, it brings you into these feelings and these struggles very well. Also just want to put out there that if it was not clear, Rich and I have covered every episode of season one. So you absolutely can go back and find that coverage if you do want to start at the beginning, because the second that we start the recap of this show, there will be big spoilers for things that happened in season one. So I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, no, great call. And so folks, if you've got an eye on the screen and page podcast feed, you may very well have seen an influx of those podcasts as I have uploaded them prior to uploading this one. So the whole archive of our coverage of Beacon 23 season one, 8 episodes, we did it over a post-show recaps. It is here now at screen and page. It will live here. You can go scope out the series for yourself. I think it's really worth the watch. Lena Headey is like bringing the heat. Season one, very fun. But I guess with all that said, Corey, let's dive into it. I got a bit of a short, long recap for season two, episode one, the premiere of our second season. And I can go over what happened this week, and then we can jump into our conversation.
Sounds great.
So we pick up precisely where we left off. Outside of the beacon are the manifested artifact and Aleph's mothership. The column freedom fighter Keir, having returned to the beacon with his companions Finch and Saldana, has just shot Astra at point blank range because he feared that she was aligning herself with the AI Aleph. Hallen is at her side, desperate and begging Harmony to assist her. But the AI assistant proclaims Astra Kallax's time of death. Hallen ferociously assaults Keir, who remains insistent that Aleph cannot have access to the artifact, no matter the cost. Aleph de-escalates the situation before Finch assaults him through the ship's computer system. Aleph able to draw them both into this digital space where he will take control of Finch's digital body, having the man nearly kill himself. Though at the last second, Hallen manages to unplug the interface, ending the conflict abruptly. Saldana, meanwhile, takes control of these column agents. She's directing Keir to try to help treat Finch while Hallen is mourning over Astra's body. Harmony, the AI assistant, is offering to help the column agents, and Keir convinces Saldana to let her, which ultimately eases Finch's pain a bit. Desperate, Finch pleads with his allies that they need to take out Aleph while he's vulnerable, and Keir is reluctant, hoping that they can find a better path. Hallen, meanwhile, is preparing Astra's funeral pod as Keir outside waits to speak with them. The two of them have a conversation, and Keir pleads with Hallen to help them fight Aleph. But Hallen ultimately says that the column are assassins, and he's furious that they've killed Astra at this point. Keir tells the man, "You have 30 minutes to clear this space," noting that the column agents are going to attack Aleph, and Keir does not want Hallen's blood on his hands, as well as Astra's. At this point, Aleph tells Hallen his promise to Astra is an extension, a promise to him, Aleph, and explains that Hallen may be the only person in the galaxy that can understand the artifact now that Astra's gone. Hallen refuses to go into the artifact. He's preparing to leave when Harmony comes to him, suggesting that Astra would want him to ally himself with the AI Aleph. Hallen ends up going back to check on Saldana and Finch, who is in an induced coma at this point. Saldana ultimately tells Hallen that Astra will go down as a martyr for the cause. But Hallen is furious and threatens to reveal that the column killed her. They end up discussing the artifact. They question whether or not it's sentient or if it has a purpose. And Saldana is adamant that Aleph cannot have access to whatever power or purpose the artifact may in fact have. She tells Hallen that he's a coward who runs and has no honor, and he in turn tells her that they are foolish martyrs looking to die in a meaningless blaze of glory, and that Aleph will see them coming. As he prepares to leave, he looks to the artifact outside of the beacon, and memories of Astra come to the front of his mind. Harmony and Aleph, meanwhile, are discussing the grief that she is experiencing in their own AI terms. Aleph claims to almost be envious, but Harmony reflects on the emotions with pain and frustration at her failure to protect her charge. She says that no rational thought could justify Astra's death, and Aleph counters that humans always have justification to kill. He asserts that he merely wants answers to the truth of the universe, and he tells Harmony that she will soon be debriefed and reprogrammed, alleviating her of this pain of grief. She's reluctant, though, and says that she wants to say goodbye. Aleph has her share all the information that she has on Hallen with him, and the pair of them rewatch his role in finding the artifact and being drawn to the beacon in the first place. At this point, Aleph immediately goes to him and says that no matter how long he runs, the artifact will eventually draw him back. He goes on to explain that Halen's father was shattered when he learned that his son had deserted the army, and Hallen ultimately admits he's going to go into the artifact, saying that he needs to know what it's capable of. If there's a chance that it might bring Astra back, he says she believed in it, so he has to try. Hallen at this point goes to Keir, and the pair discuss attacking Aleph, with Hallen suggesting that he's double dealing to try to get close to the AI. He says that he knows that the effort will kill him, but he's willing to try. Aleph confronts Saldana at this point, saying that Finch forced his hand, and offers to fix her lover and let them both go if Saldana is willing to give up the names of the column leadership to him. He says that in the end, he's going to win, but the freedom fighter rejects him succinctly. At this point, Halen and Keir, Aleph comes to Halen requesting Aster's pendant, noting that it's a replica of the artifact's molecular structure, but Halen refuses to hand it over. Harmony appears and says that she has full access of the schematics, but for some reason Aleph can't see it. She posits that the artifact is affecting him somehow, uploads the data, and he departs, leaving her with Halen for a moment, who thanks her before she goes. Meanwhile, Halen and Keir have discussed planting the explosives in Aster's sleep pod, and they had Finch wake up and reconnect with the beacon to trigger a false dark matter alarm that's going to distract Aleph. Harmony will see them loading the explosives into Aster's pod on a monitor, but she does not warn her superior AI. So at this point, Halen, with the explosives in Aster's pod, departs, and the AI and the column fighters all watch from the beacon as his ship moves towards the artifact. Aleph is directing him while Keir and the others begin to panic, thinking that he's betrayed them. At this point, Halen begins to gain speed and ejects Aster's pod with the explosives, aiming it directly into the artifact, which detonates in a massive explosion that partially shreds the beacon, though does not destroy it. He attempts to escape, but Aleph seizes control of the ship, turning him right back around. And as he comes back, passing the GWB, again, he reflects on these memories of his time spent there with Aster. The ship docks. Aleph's drones descend from space and begin to disassemble of it as Halen moves back into the beacon, looking over one of the rocks in his hand. He finds Saldana, Finch, and Keir laid out on the floor, presumably dead or dying, as Aleph confronts him. The AI says the remnants of his former human self allowed him to trust when he shouldn't have, but that he has evolved now. Harmony confronts him about his idea of hunting the column down, pursuing them with the purge of their ranks. Aleph tells Halen he will never leave the beacon, and Harmony that she has betrayed him. He shuts off the AI assistant, and he himself vanishes as the beacon lights begin powering down, leaving Halen alone in the dark with the corpses of the column agents. Corey, that was a real paradigm shift. We really swung it back around. I very much remembered this cliffhanger of season one. Our final beats is Aster getting kind of shot point blank and going down. I didn't think they'd do it, but yeah. Sounds like she's dead.
Yeah, it's wild because to me, just given the timing of season two so soon after season one and where we picked this off moments after season one ended, it almost felt like the end of season one was like a mid-season finale.
Right.
And I feel like it does seem like Aster is 100% dead, but I also think that we are getting into some weird sort of extra dimensional places conceptually. With this show, we already had the idea of the artifact and Aster somehow going inside the artifact. And now Halen is trying to in her stead, right? And the idea of this artifact that the AI can't see, and there's some way to go inside of it. Aster had visions of Halen already there. Some part of Halen was already inside of it in season one. And that's why she knew that he was supposed to go too. And then there's also the extra dimensional side of like going inside of Aleph's AI. And when we had that battle where Finch tries to attack him, and then it turns out that he could control him within, it's like a Matrix, your mind makes it real sort of thing, and he gets the scars on the outside world. And so I almost wonder, in the case of, you know, Aster being dead, is the move that Halen did, kind of jettisoning Aster's body into the artifact, where you don't see the pod after the artifact collapses, is that possibly a way to reunite her body with her mind, if her mind somehow did get into the artifact before she died? And yeah, that's sort of my question.
It's definitely my question, right? I mean, we can't talk about Lena Headey without acknowledging Game of Thrones to a degree. Game of Thrones, very infamously in season one, decapitates what's potentially its main character. So I can't help but feel the connection there as we come back in to Aster, like, officially being proclaimed dead in episode one. But at the same time, we have Aleph standing in the room with us, who at one point in time was a man named Milan, right? Death is not necessarily the end of a character's presence or role on screen. And Glenn Mazar had given some interesting interviews at the season one finale where he said, look, this is not a show that we're ever going to play with time travel, like spoilers, but we're never going to go back and perform some action that will rewrite the course of events. Time matters to people. And ultimately, the moment that we exist in is the most important moment. And what happens there is irrevocable. We cannot unmake that. But we've discovered a number of fascinating ways through use of flashbacks, which were heavily featured in season one, and this notion of an evolved AI, a kind of hybridized android synthetic humanoid, right? That much like Aleph that we will allude to at the end. So to your point, as Aster's body is hurtled into this like amorphous, anomalous artifact with strange existential properties, Corey, I can't help but question whether or not he will be restored to life at some point.
I think that Aster coming back seems like a very likely thing, and not to pull back the covers too much, but she's on the poster for the season. And you got to think that she's still a credited character in the cast. You got to think that she's not just acting, in that her body is being picked up off the floor and being spun around in the dead zone of the beacon.
I wondered how tactical they were, though, because I've seen a bunch of like promotional images, and I'm like, gosh, they're being like very tactical about where they're showing Lena Headey's face.
Yes.
So it's a huge question mark. And I think that it's a win for the series. Like, a thing Grace and I talked about a lot is the idea that a show teaches you how to watch it. And part of what we've learned after 8 episodes of Beacon 23 is, like, you know, don't take everything at face value. There are deeper layers. To your point, there are other dimensions that we're operating on.
Yeah, and you mentioned too, in terms of Aleph, like, Aleph says in this episode that I am a transhumanist. His whole mission is to expand the capabilities of the human race and allow the human race to survive. And obviously, a lot of the question marks and the themes that we're exploring in this episode are about that, and about what is the cost, what cost is too great for. Mm-hmm. For you know, us to evolve or even save the human race. But in that same sense, I think the transhumanism of Aleph is definitely hinting at the fact that there is transhumanism that is possible. We already saw it with Aleph, as you mentioned, sort of turning into the AI or algorithm, as he calls himself, through presumably something similar to the artifact happening to him right before he died. And now we have Aster. She's almost, you know, certainly dead, but did she ascend to some point beyond standard human capabilities with the help of the artifact? And I think that my guess is yes. My guess is that she's in the artifact right now in some form or fashion. And whether or not she comes back into the beacon is another question. Does she actually get to live again? Or is it some like force ghost?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I love that you invoke a force ghost, because you can't help but connect a little bit to the Star Wars of it all, where there are these elements of hard science fiction. There is hard science here that is facilitating a lot of this, and some of it is interrogated pretty deeply. Notably, this show is an adaptation of a book written by Hugh Howey, is his name, right?
Hugh Howey,
I'm pronouncing that right. He, you know, so we're adapting material here, but there's hard science, sci-fi elements that he interrogates pretty deeply, things like the GWB, even the whole notion of the beacon system alone. Like there's a measure of depth in the science there that's even a little bit more kind of verifiable than what we often get in something like a Star Wars. That's just like, yeah, light speed, whatever, don't worry about it, you know, thermal detonators. But in Star Wars, there's also this very obvious mysticism that exists in these all these different facets. And part of what we've explored across Beacon 23 is this metaphysical, like this mystical connection that Aster and Halen notably have had with the artifact. You know, there was this big kind of flashback sequence and reveal toward the end of season one that Aster grew up on the Beacon, that she had a different name even as a child and had this kind of profound emotional tether to the artifact when it appeared outside there. So I'm really curious, like, how much of it actually is science and how much of it is mystic, like, because there's a world where it's all hard science and we just don't understand what the science of it is yet, Corey. And a part of me is really fascinated with, like, which path we're going to take to get to our answers. Because another thing Glenn Mazzara notably said around his press for the season one finales is, we have a plan. We are going someplace. We're not just throwing ideas at the wall. We're going to very thoroughly explore ideas of, like, humanity and AI and all these things. But there is a clear direction for the plot, right?
Which I appreciate.
Yes, me too.
And I think that the question, especially like the, you know, is there a scientific explanation? Is there some mysticism beyond this? I think it's a very prescient one, because I think that this note that the AI cannot see anything about the artifact and cannot sense it, right? Aleph is asking Harmony, is everything that I heard in these data extracts about Halen, is it true? And she's like, well, I can't say for sure. I've never seen it, but I know that Aster believes that it's true. And so there is a sense of, like, you know, seeing is believing sort of thing for the AI. The humans only are the only ones that can see it. Even Aleph, who used to be a human, the second he stopped being a human, he could no longer see the artifact. And there is some level of mysticism to that. It's almost like some of the mystic elements of, like, a Star Wars type franchise were never found, and they're just floating out there in this little orb waiting to be discovered in some ways. Not that this would ever turn into Star Wars, but, you know, it's that idea that there is some mystic force out there that has just been dormant for a very, very long time and somehow connected to this beacon. Or is there some very clear scientific explanation to all this that we can, you know, we can point out?
Yeah, I find it particularly fascinating. I really like Aleph as a character. The actor is Eric Lang. I may be pronouncing that wrong, but I think that he's really compelling in the role. And part of what I like about him is it's not the omniscient, all-knowing AI. Like, he does not know what's going on with the artifact. There is uncertainty there and a questioning to his whole existence that I find really, like, compelling as a vehicle. And as the foil to him, we have Harmony, AI assistant to Aster, and she, like, makes a bunch of points across the episode of, like, you know, I'm kind of, like, biometrically dialed into Aster. I can't give you good advice, Halen. I could just, like, be your friend, kind of. But we see this compassion bleeding into her, and an AI that was built and fabricated by Aleph under his total, like, dominion and control. Like, Harmony asserts at the end of season one very firmly to Aster, I cannot go against his will. He has, like, absolute authority over me in terms of Aleph. Like, that is my creator, right? But we see her then seemingly go against his will in this episode and act with compassion, humanity, like, friendship towards Halen, right? And that is infinitely fascinating to me, Corey, especially because one of them has an origin point as an organic carbon-based life form, and the other one is, like, a pure construct in that way, right?
And the latter is the one that's showing more emotion and more capability of reason and emotion. Yeah, it's wild. And in fact, Aleph even compared himself to Harmony in saying that she is a single-purpose AI who has a finite time frame on her mission, and he's almost envious of her for that, where he defines himself as an ever-changing algorithm. So he does consider himself different from her, but in some ways she is exhibiting far more human qualities than he did. And as he mentions in the end of the episode, he's continuously evolving himself, and potentially, I think it's a symbol of leaving his humanity even further behind. He's like, this last little bit of my humanity is now what was causing me to falter. So now I am just not human anymore. All remaining elements of my humanity are gone. And the separation and distinction between the two of them is fascinating, especially because there's a command issue there where she is literally bound to him and sacrifices so much by even questioning him in the first place. I mean, he made her dump all that information on Halen. Like, there's so much that he could do with her. As we saw at the end, she just sort of had a creepy scream-like scan line disappearing. She might be dead. I'm not sure. Sort of vibe, right? It's a really, honestly, like, kind of uncomfortable power dynamic between the two of them.
Yes.
But not in a bad way, in a way where I'm like, oh, I really hope that she can find some freedom or independence at some point, if that wasn't the end of her in the first place. A lot of characters that we don't know what's going to happen to them in the show right now.
Yeah, very true. There are about a lot of big question marks. I'm 100% with you. Just the two of them engaging the way they are, it's so compelling, because he's talking about destroying this last vestige of humanity, of that like impurity, kind of creating the misstep in his logic that led him to this catastrophe that he finds himself in. But the reality is that he's reacting in a very human, emotional way. Right, it's very kind of like retributive of like, okay, I will punish you, then I will exterminate you, that is my solution. Like, you can follow it through the path of like the cold machine logic, like the only way for me to not have to deal with this threat is to completely exterminate it, but it is also like a very human impulse to respond with like vitriol and retaliation when you are hurt, when you have something that you desire taken out of your grasp, right? And as she's giving him the very logical, like, you're about to pursue genocide, like a purge. This is not acceptable on any metric of the measure, you know? And he's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Like, I now, interestingly, to your point, he has given himself a finite goal that he states at the end of the episode. True. Now I have purpose. I will reassemble the artifact, right? And that is an interesting like pivot in this evolution that he's making.
Yeah, I agree. And it's so interesting because he's presented and in fact outright stated in this episode as having the ambitions of becoming a god. And there is so much to his pursuit of the artifact that he claims is related to saving humanity, and I will sacrifice as many lives, your life, my life, none of it ever matters. All we really need to care about is the preservation and extension of the human race, and, you know, the transhumanism side of things. But there is a lot of personal power to be gained for him by this. And you have to wonder, how much of this is he justifying as being this cold, hard facts, data-driven analysis? And how much of it is truly just a selfish ambition for more power that, interestingly, the artifact is also seemingly blocking him from gaining in some way. So there is some, which is another subject, but I did find it interesting that it seems like the artifact is starting to, in fact, impact him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, back to that whole notion of like the AI can't see it. It works on both levels, where it could be a mystical element that's imperceivable because of their lack of like a human sense that is kind of unquantified amongst the five, or just like high-end tech that's kind of hiding itself from him. But it's really compelling, the idea that he's misfiring or there's something wrong inside the algorithm because of the artifact's impact there. Another thing, you know, again, I don't mean to keep invoking it, but as I, it's front of mind for me because I just read it. But the Glenn Mazzara like interview, some of the things that he was talking about is the notion that like there is clarification there. We're going to like really get at some of the answers to the artifact. They're not going to string us along forever. They know they have these two seasons to like deliver. They hope they get more. There's more story to tell, but there will be some clarity there because I'm going to want to know more about the artifact and like its role on all of this, the further that we go here. We haven't talked a lot about the humans so far, but how did you feel, I guess, Corey, in terms of like, I think if you were binging this show, it would probably translate like really lovely from episode 8 into episode 1.
I think so too.
How do you feel that like we handled all of our human players, this whole deal of the column and Keir, Saldana, and Finch as they're like dealing with the rapid fallout? Like, I guess one of my critiques for the episode is like, and there was a lot of like jumping around of like, Finch is in a coma, Finch is out of the coma, Finch is back, we're plugging Finch in, are you tracking what's going on? Like, Keir is desperate, he doesn't want to do this, but he's gonna do this.
Yeah, pacing wise, there were a lot, and I think a lot of the time, the hard thing about how fast they went with a lot of that to me was that there were a lot of evolving and mutating alliances in terms of what's going on in the beginning. And Halen hates somebody the one second, and you know, 10 minutes later, he's working together with them on a plan. And I mean, it's all justifiable, but it is hard to keep your finger down on. And frankly, if you started watching season two from just this point and never having seen season one, my favorite thing, just thinking about it like from an outside perspective, is you probably would think that Keir, Finch, and Saldana were pretty big characters in season one. And they were very much not. I mean, Keir a little bit more than the other two, but and you know, season one was very much a story of there's no more than usually about two or three people in the beacon at one time. Sometimes it's just Halen. People come and go. There's flashbacks of people who used to be on the beacon, and then it seems sort of just kind of helping us fill in the plot, but eventually most of it connected together to help us understand more and move the plot forward. And then we have all this chaos with all these humans, and by the end of it, we're back to just Halen alone on the beacon again, as I sort of mentioned towards the beginning. So I think that in some ways it was like almost an like a putting pressing on the brakes a little bit, right? Like we had so much steam ending season one, so many things happened, the culmination of all these different players, and then everybody just kind of either leaves or dies, except for Halen. And I almost think some of the pacing was so that we could get back to the quiet stories that we've had and the sort of subtle mystery that we often had from season one.
I
if that
agree
makes
with
sense.
you. I think like some of our favorite stuff across season one were the really intimate scenes, and we really loved Aster and Halen together. There were a couple of like great just dynamics between them and scenes and episodes across the way, but we had these really notable interesting flashback episodes where we're kind of like going back to Bart and Solomon stuff and the whole thing with like Milan and everything that happened there, the origin story, the Keir episode. Keir is a character I really like, though now I'm like emotionally angsty about it, Corey, because he killed Aster, and I'm like, you bastard, how dare you? So part of my question, as we come to the end of it, like Saldana and Finch, yeah, whatever, I could take them or leave them, you know, they're more plot devices to me than like deep fully realized characters. But Keir, I really did like, and especially the way he was like trying to be like, God, I'm sorry I killed her, but I had to, and like, please don't make me kill you too. There has to be a better way. Like, he so clearly feels trapped where he is, and the exploration of him as a character that we got is like, he's a guy that felt a little bit powerless, which is how he got swept up in all of this to begin with. My question for you is kind of similarly to Aster. Do we think they're all really dead? Like, are these people all actually suffocated dead at the end? And maybe we'll like recapture their essence in some digital way, or are they going to wake back up, or what are you thinking here, Corey?
I feel like they're dead. Now I will say, actually, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about Aster. The pool of blood behind Aster's head looked really bad to me. It looked very unrealistic to me. And then
Like
there's that,
Coca-Cola syrup on
yeah,
the
and it's just like kind of like a stage prop. It like it hasn't like stained into the ground at all. It doesn't move at all. He lifts up her head. Nothing's like dripping from her. There's like, it's just like sitting there, like you know, like when you're at the furniture store and they have those like cups of soda that are just fake and you can tip them over and nothing happens. Which was a very rare criticism from me. But I noticed it so much in that one shot.
It's very fair. I remember being on a vacation with my mom when I was a little kid. This is a real tangent. And they brought the dessert tray around, Corey. It was a very expensive restaurant. And so they had this big like block, a cross section of like a log of wood, polished and lovely with all these desserts on it. And I'm like, oh yeah, these are plastic desserts. At which point I like shoved my finger straight into the chocolate cake because I thought that they were like the sodas at the furniture store. It just looked so fake. But it was not. It was a real chocolate
Oh
cake. And
no.
there was like much, but it did remind me of that. I have to say, I thought actually, I'm often the one that's more critical of the pair of us of the, like visual effects, but I thought that all the outer space effect looked so good, man.
I do
Like,
agree with
while
that.
I'm saying it is like a mid-budget show, I mean that in the sense that it's not like the gigantic ensemble that you got even on like a Battlestar Galactica Once Upon a Time, or like, you know, it doesn't have like the marquee kind of promotional budget of a Star Trek or anything that's happening on Disney Plus, but they're spending their money effectively. actually. Like, so much of this, the episodes hinge on just the set and the actors in the set. But when they come outside of it for these big sweeping CGI shots, like, they're crossing their T's and dotting their I's, because that shit looks really good.
It does. And I mean, I gave this praise all through season one as well. They have an eye for detail in the best way possible. And yeah, to your point, the size of their budget is usually, with that one exception, this is the first time I think I've ever made that criticism in the entire show.
Right.
Their budget is just in terms of how much they do, not how well they do it. And I think that, you know, every little tiny detail, like several times in season one, we paused and we said, oh, I read that screen for 5 minutes,
you know,
every little tab about Halen's life you could read. And it was an actual story. That stuff is really great. And they have such a cool eye for detail in the show. And and there was much more space than I think we're used to in this show, in this episode. And it, to your point, all looked gorgeous. The shot of the pieces of the artifact going down and destroying his ship, that was a very cool scene. I don't know why it seemed very targeted, by the way.
So I might have been misreading this, but I thought that was like Aelith's mothership with like his little drones.
And they weren't red, so I kind of like figured it was the artifact, but I bet you're right. I'm sure it was like his ship.
Yeah. I think it was like Aelith like disassembling the thing, like, now you're not going anywhere, right? I'm gonna take your ride apart or whatever.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah,
it's like coming out to find your car on cinder blocks if you spent like a night in New York City, you know. Been there, done that. And we haven't talked about Halen very much, Corey. Like, he's obviously at this point our like central emotional tether. I mean, he's left in this like literal vacuum of space. I thought it was a very effective like closing beat, the slow like sequence of the lights shutting down as like we're pulling away, you know, and the little bits of like as he's coming back in the ship and he's going to pass all of the kind of the clear glass or whatever, the clear protective coating in the GWB is like blown out after the explosion. But as he comes past it in these memories of he and Aster like drunk on the like tones of the GWB, like, it really hit me, man. I was like, oh God, like, I'm going to miss having the two of them together if I'm never going to see it again in any capacity. And like, man, I feel for this guy. And the way he goes from like, okay, execute me, to like, wait, no, you can't leave me here alone. You can't leave me here alone. Because like, we found this guy in a bit of like isolation, deprivation in episode one, Once Upon a Time, Corey, right? Like, he knows this trip. He does not want to be alone again.
Yeah. And he's gone through so much. And I think part of the evolution or his journey in this episode is like, Halen had a very specific mindset going in episode one, season one, and he met Aster and he grew in this relationship and gained this empathy, made friends, including with Harmony and all these other people. And even reached an agreement with Bart, like a friendly, you know, way to say goodbye to Bart. And all of this leads to Aster dying. And then I think he sort of goes through it all again. You know, he starts the show very much like, F it, I'm out. You know, like, that's like, that's like his mindset. And you see right away in the beginning of this episode, he's like, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm taking Aster's body with me. The only reason he saves Finch is because he's just fed up with the fact that they're fighting while they should be mourning Aster. He doesn't do it because he cares about Finch. He does it because he's just like, this is ridiculous. Fight on your own time. And you know, he it's interesting because he ultimately does have these memories and these flashbacks and reminding him who he cared about and that there was a purpose and that Aster cared about it. So maybe he should care about it too, to the point where all of it happens. And then the funny thing about it to me is he sort of has that again. Well, I'm out of here. I did what I wanted to do with Aster. I'm gone. And then he is sort of forcibly moved back into the equation and said, nope, you're still not going anywhere. You're back to that isolation that he feared so much in the past.
Yeah, there was a huge like lost element right there. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, is he going to leave the beacon? Are we leaving the beacon? Is this the end of Beacon 23? And like, no, sorry, you're coming right back around, my friend. One of the things that like I didn't track precisely, and I was wondering if maybe you did he end up taking Aster's pendant? Because like I see him looking at it. We have Aleph confronting him that like, give me the pendant. And Halen is like, no, I cannot. We know that the pendant represents the molecular structure of the artifact. That has importance beyond the emotional connection to her. But do you did you catch if Halen like had it in his possession?
No, I never actually saw him take it. We had that scene where Aleph like was sort of asking him for it, and he's saying, mm-hmm. no, you won't have it. And then Harmony said, I'll just give you the data. But I don't remember him like ever taking it from her. He did Nor take something I. from her, and I didn't quite peg what that was that he did take from her, but it was not the necklace.
I think what he takes from her is the rock that he has in his hand when he comes back after he blows her up. He's like standing in the airlock and he looks down at the rock in his hand, because I couldn't see it either. And it's when we get that scene of Harmony giving Aleph the schematics. I was like, wait, I don't know where the pendant is. And I think that I'm just making note of it because I think we're not supposed to know where the pendant is. And that's pretty interesting.
I think that's right.
And to your point of the shifting alliances, I did think this was effective. Like, we got to the point where Halen and Keir are talking, and Halen's like, you know, he'll never suspect me. He has this deal with Aster. Now he thinks it counts for me. He's going to let me get close, and then he's going to take off. And I got very confused. I was like, wait, what is Halen actually doing? And to that end, I think the show is like very effective in us like being in the role of both the AI of Aleph and Harmony and these column agents watching Halen fly away. Like, what the F is this guy about to do? You know, there was just no certainty. And it took a second to realize, like, okay, he'll blow up the artifact. I thought the little Aleph line at the end, like, oh, if she can't have it, nobody can, really clarifies if there was any confusion there. But I just wondered if you felt like that was like communicated effectively, because we were playing with like truth and reality a lot there. And I wasn't sure if they might have lost the message in the delivery, you know?
I think that I can look back on it and understand what happened. But in the moment, I was definitely a little confused and I had to sort of think back on it a little bit. And I do think a lot of that is not letting it marinate quite as much. So I had to sort of think back and be like, okay, well, why did it work that way? It was kind of hard to understand at first what Halen was doing, which was fine. But then why he did it was like another, like, you know, scratch your chin for a minute and be like, okay, what happened there? But I think I got there eventually. Ultimately, I think it's just a matter of, you know, this episode could have been maybe 10 or 15 minutes longer and it would have helped a lot, I think.
I think that's fair. I had the exact other thought where I was like, I wonder if they could have like truncated it as he's flying out and then like picked it up at the beginning of the next episode with a little bit of clarity of the like, wait, is he going to the mothership? Is he going to the artifact? Is he just leaving? Right?
Like cliffhanger there.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Anyway, I think overall, I pretty much enjoyed it. You know, I'm a little like daunted and openly, I will say, like, I hope Lena Headey is going to like return at some point, make an appearance. Because for me, part of what was so electric about season one was the chemistry between her and Halen. I think that they had a really great energy. And we've talked about it a bunch on this podcast, but I think that this show kind of lives and dies in rooms with people having conversations. As much as like when we get outside and these high concept ideas and the exploration of like AI and humanity and peoplehood and religion and politics and alliances. Like, I love all the toys we're playing with.
Right.
It's like greatest strength is far and away the actors and their like chemistry together. And these two were really good together. So I hope that's not the last like pairing we'll have seen of these two.
I hope not either. I think, and I suspect that it won't be, but I don't know to what degree it won't be. I think the two, like, I would imagine that they won't stray too far away from that, because as you know, I have read Beacon 23, the book by Hugh Howey. And if you don't remember or don't know from season one in our discussions, the show doesn't take a ton from the books, the general setting, a lot of the vibes of the Beacon itself. But a lot of what the show does is a complete departure. It's like the same story, but with more characters, and the plot either isn't going to where it went in the book or isn't yet. But either way, thematically, a lot of it is very much the same, where it struggles with this, you know, post-war veteran who was dishonorably discharged, who's alone on the Beacon and trying to figure out what his meaning is, who he is, and ultimately centers around the relationships that he builds and the connections that he makes and the empathy that he ends up having for other people. And I think that, like, to your point, everything else is toys and fun to explore and fun to figure out the sci-fi and what world are we in and what has happened in this world and what will happen. But I do think that the core of the show, just like it was the core of the book, is nestled right into those relationships and how they work. And I think it would be a mistake to keep Aster out of that equation because of the relationships that they've built. But I could see them saying, you know, in what way do you have to be present to maintain that relationship? Like, mm-hmm. you know, in some ways, if Aster is stuck in the artifact, you know, what if they end up having like the long distance phase of their relationship during this season or part of the season? I'm very curious about that and to figure out what they're going to do with it. But I do think and I do hope that, you know, at some point, either now or in the future, they can reunite Halen and Aster, because that is, I agree that that's sort of like the heart of the show for me.
Yeah, well said. We shall see what happens in the future. What's going to happen, we'll be telling you every week as we turn up to break down the episodes as they're coming. Looks like they're going to be dropping every Sunday night over on MGM+. Hunt around a little bit. I'll let you guys know if I find it anywhere else. I know during season one, it did turn up on Amazon for a lot of folks. But Beacon 23, that is episode one of season two, Corey. Anything that I overlooked?
You know, I don't necessarily think so. We covered a lot of the characters. We covered a lot of the AI. There's a couple like general question marks in terms of the show. Like what's going on between Halen and his dad that he would literally stop escaping just because he was like either afraid or worried for his dad or worried about meeting his dad. You know, there's a lot of little things like that, that I think, and I hope that we're going to explore that makes these characters deeper. But at this point, we don't have a lot of characters left. Mm-mm. So a lot of the question marks for me going into it is who's alive? who is actually still alive and who is dead? We have both of our AA friends presumably gone now between Harmony and Bart. We have Aster presumably gone. Halen's by himself. The three other humans on the ship are on the beacon. Have died, presumably. There's a lot of question marks around, like, who are we even going to see next episode? You know, is it going to be just a Halen solo show?
It's Halen and his pet Rock, you know?
That's right, Rocky the pet Rock, for yep. sure. Yeah, that would be interesting.
It certainly would. I really did miss Bart. We didn't like talk much about Bart, but the absence of Bart was felt by me across this episode. This is a really good time. I thank you for joining me, Corey. I'm very excited for us to break down the rest of the season as it's coming. I know that you're keeping busy out there in the world as Beacon 23 season 2 episode 1 is over, but we're just getting started, Corey. What do you got going on out there? Where can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing I'll plug, of course, is my new podcast, another branch out of the extended post-show recaps coaching tree, as it were, called Arcade Pizza. So definitely find me there. We're sort of two sides of a similar coin. Arcade Pizza sort of covering specifically the intersection of video games and media. So we're covering a lot of shows based on games based on shows, and really anything in that general region that we feel like covering. Pretty lighthearted effort and a lot of fun. If you want to drop by, you can subscribe at Arcade Pizza. Follow us at Arcade Pizza Pod or go to arcade.pizza to learn how to subscribe or just search for us. I think we're in most places now. And that's where you can find what I've been doing most recently of all. We just covered Arc the Animated Series, which was actually a really fun show.
It's a stacked cast. You and I were talking about it a little bit offline, but they dropped this show in like a surprise release over on Paramount Plus. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And it's
an incredible cast list. I really want to check it out.
It's absurd. Like, and it's very good. And I don't watch a lot of animated shows, but it's a really fun show. I cover it with JD over there. Neither of us really got that into the game, but the show is phenomenal. So I definitely recommend giving that a try. There's a lot of cool game-based franchises that are coming to our screens this month and in coming months as well. So we have a lot of cool stuff to cover, and you can always find me at Cavx, C-A-V-X, on whatever platforms you might be interested in finding me on if I'm there. How about you, Rich?
Yeah, I can't recommend enough that you join me and go subscribe to Arcade Pizza. They're doing some very fun stuff over there. I am talking about animated shows and video games this very week, Corey, as X-Men 97 is airing over on Disney Plus. Episode 4 just dropped. Motendo was a two-part episode, one half of which was Motendo. So we got a very fun jaunt back into the X-Men of the 90s in a pixelated format with a little bit of an homage to some of the arcade X-Men games that we knew and loved in the 90s. I'm breaking down those episodes every week with Kevin Mahadeo. I'm joined by a special guest this week, Todd Librarian from over at the Whirlwind Podcast, for an extra interview pod with him, deep diving the X-Men a little bit. That's going to be very fun. Myth and Legends, our Wheel of Time book club podcast, kicking it up. We have read the first section of the first book of Robert Jordan's epic fantasy series, The Eye of the World, again. So the first podcast in that series, breaking down through chapter 13 of book one of The Wheel of Time, will be dropping next week. A lot of fun coverage coming in the next couple of weeks, where we got Fallout is coming pretty soon, Outer Range next month. So I'm excited about that. If you've heard this podcast and you're not subscribed to the RSS feed, you should be. You're not going to want to miss any of this cool stuff that's coming to you. So go hunt us down. Make sure you subscribe, Screen and Page Podcasts on all your major podcast players. We're Screen Page Pod on all the socials. Hit us up if you have recommendations, requests, thoughts, feedback about any of the things we're talking about, especially Beacon 23. I would really love to hear from you in terms of what you're thinking about the season. But thank you for hanging out with us this week. We will be back in 1 week's time talking about episode 2 of season 2 of Beacon 23.